You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
28 minutes before noon, and we're going to be focusing, as I said this morning, on the very important, difficult topic of breast cancer. And if you're a breast cancer survivor in particular, I hope that you are going to be tuning in, share your stories and the connections between, not the connections, the reality of what that means for you as a sexual being in terms of sex and sexuality. Dr. Eve, hello.
Hello, Eusebius. Sure, you need a breath.
Who, me?
Yeah, you just keep rolling.
Yeah, I read your blog post on this yesterday and again this morning, and I must say, obviously, time will not be enough. We're not going to be playing music today. We're going to take this topic to the top of the hour because there's so many important issues. I am one of many people in the world who are just scared of the possibility of a cancer diagnosis. But when I think about cancer, I fear death, to be honest. And your blog is so important in today's topic because if you are a survivor, every day that you are not dead, despite your existential fears, you have to reconstruct physically and psychosexually the kind of person that you were perhaps before modification to your body.
Right. And can you imagine that the current manifestation of breast cancer in the world is that of a pink aura, which I'm sure you, like all of our listeners, have seen and are very aware of, and which I absolutely find more than distasteful, but rather insulting to anyone who is a survivor of breast cancer and to any woman who fears it. Because one in eight white women have a chance of having breast cancer in this country, the same as the rest of the westernized world. And for black women in our country, 35 out of about 100,000 have a chance of having cancer. We don't even know if those facts are true because there really isn't a good register of keeping touch of incidence of cancer in people. In the public sector, the resources are absolutely horrific in terms of women just going in and getting diagnosed or having an opportunity to be examined. So what prompted me into this topic is that I have been, I work a lot with what's called oncosexology, people who have breast cancer, have cancer of all kinds actually, and then come to me because of sexual health difficulties. And earlier this year, I just was devastated, as I always am, by a couple who sat down and said, this is what cancer has done to our sexuality. And I took the gap and I phoned the surgeon and I said, enough, you know, you really, really have to be attending to the sexual health of your patients. It's not good enough that you just ignore it and feel happy that they've survived. They are sexual beings, and at different stages they are sexual beings. And this man has just been quite remarkable. And so tomorrow I'm actually going to be presenting at the Cape Town Breast Cancer Forum, and I hope that I will become an integral part of their team to let them learn a little more around sexual health. Mm. Well, the thing that we have to learn is that being diagnosed is a traumatic event, as you alluded to now, for every single woman and for their partner or partners and their families, because of what the symbolism of breasts are in terms of sexuality and femininity. And immediately the sense of fear and shame settle into this woman and to her partner. And what happens at that time is that she becomes medicalized by going into the arms of the medical world, which is absolutely necessary for her to do. But at the point of diagnosis, no one talks to her about what is going to be the ultimate outcome of her of treatments on her sexuality and long-term into the future. We know that 70% of breast cancer survivors have got sexual dysfunction that persists not only into their first year of treatment, but we now know that they actually worsen over time. So you know when you're going in that you are going to have some kind of sexual dysfunction, but in that time of trauma, you're not feeling sexy, you're not thinking sexuality, and nobody else is. And so you think, okay, this is just going to be about survival and I just want to live. And over time, your losses become absolutely apparent to you. And I want to know from my listeners, you know, what has been the worst loss for you? What did you expect from your healthcare provider? Did the silence that greeted you around your sexual health in the moment and also in the time, did it bother you? Did you long for any information around sexuality at any stage of your treatment? And how really have you managed your sexuality throughout your journey? And I'm going to be quiet and hope that people will talk for me.
You know, I want us to step back and talk about breasts. The one thing that struck me is that one of the reasons that you puzzled through in your wonderfully frank way in this blog entry, Dr. Eve, one of the challenges with being a breast cancer survivor, particularly if you've had an operation, is that we live in a world in which breasts feature in particular ways because of social and cultural memes that have been handed down. Can we just talk about that? What it is about the breasts physically as a part of sexuality in our discourse around women's bodies that partly feed into the challenges post-operationally for how you might live with your new body as a breast cancer survivor. And it was so funny, not quite funny, ha-ha, because I was watching with my partner a television series last night that we both enjoy, and there's one scene there where this couple is just romping away, and this woman then goes to the kitchen, you know, after the post-coital discussion they have, and the perky has breasts, and she's got, you know, breasts, also her nipples are pierced. And I thought to myself, even when that in popular culture is a scene that you might see in a film or in a TV series, it's because breasts are expected to be there, to look a certain way. And that is a conversation that we need to open up as well, because it partly goes into why it may be so challenging for breast cancer survivors to be able to you know, have new relationships with their body.
Oh, goodness. And new relationships with their sexuality.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's very entertaining for me, or heartbreaking for me, whichever way you want to take it, that breasts are never spoken about in a sexual context. And by that I mean, do I depend on my breasts to be aroused? You know, that is what women's breasts are for, feeding and also for sexual arousal. But who talks about the nipple as being a place where actually when I don't have it, I don't have desire and I don't have arousal and I don't have orgasms anymore? It's more the aesthetics of it and the representation of it, which is what we focus on and which causes enormous difficulty for women who are just healthy in terms of wanting to modify their breasts to meet a certain look, and depending on who's popular, if it's Kim Kardashian, who it is that's putting their breasts on show, we want to be looking like that. And so when we no longer look like that, immediately we are desexualized and we are thought we don't feel whole anymore. There is an absolute association with reproduction, which is something which is also an enormous loss for women with breast cancer, especially younger women. And that's what I'm talking about specifically tomorrow. The younger woman who may not have reproduced yet and wants to breastfeed, or has reproduced and wants to still breastfeed another child. The impact of that is hideous. I mean, that's the purpose of breast. But the sexual importance of that is huge. It talks to people about her sexuality, or she thinks it does. The way she dresses it up, the way she undresses it, the way she wears it. And women spend a fortune, you know, paradoxically, on slashing and cutting their breasts and modifying them without having breast cancer. Irrespective of the fact that they lose sensation afterwards and that they can't get sexually aroused, this is how much we emphasize breasts. Breasts and hair, which are the two things that happen with breast cancer patients once they get into systemic treatment, they're going to be losing their hair because of some of the chemotherapy that they may be getting. So all sense of femininity is taken away, and by that I'm not undermining how you represent or you think about yourself as a woman. The feminine side of every single self-identified female is taken away through breasts and through hair. And that diminishes sexual desire immediately right there. You're not going to feel as if you're sexual. You're not going to feel as if you are desirable. And so depression sets in. And what happens when we have depression? We have less sexual arousal. And so the cycle and the circle just keeps going throughout your treatment.
In fact, I want to read two paragraphs here of your words for our listeners. Dr. Eve writes, chemotherapy induces menopause plus weight gain, loss, and hair loss. Like breasts, hair is associated with femininity and sexuality. It's hard to feel sexy with no hair, and radiation leaves you with inflamed, scarred breasts that may look and feel differently and do not invite touch by either you or a partner. That jumped out at me, Dr. Eve, because quite apart from the breast itself, the chemotherapy obviously has other consequences. So when we talk about breast cancer and sexuality, we are also talking about other effects that treatment has on the body, hormones, and therefore sexuality.
Well, you know, we go right back to what we spoke about 2 weeks ago, I think it was, in menopause.
Yes.
So these women who are young get into what's called surgical menopause just by the treatments that they're on, whether it is tamoxifen or whether it is an aromatase inhibitor or the chemotherapy itself. They go into menopause, and then we're right into the symptoms of menopause, and they can't take any hormone replacements. just like regular menopause women, to be able to get them to feel healthy and alive and sexual again. In fact, there's been such a huge response to the menopause work that we did. UCBC said, I've actually planned a menopause weekend away for women, a fantastic weekend away for women, which I'll talk more about, and for breast cancer survivors to attend that.
Okay, 18 minutes before noon. Do you have fears around breast cancer and its impact on sex and sexuality? Are you a survivor? Is what Dr. Eve has been describing recognizable to you? How are you handling it? Are you struggling? This is, of course, a safe space, and we'll do as much as we can with Dr. Eve's expert assistant to engage you on your story. So I invite you to give us a call if you're in Johannesburg on 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. 17 minutes before noon. We'll take a break and then more about breast cancer, sexual loss and relationship loss as well on the other side of this break.
702 and Cape Talk.
Talking sex.
We've got plenty of calls, Dr. Eve. Let's take some of those, shall we, before we continue with one or two more insights from your research. Let's go to Santa and Papa. Good morning, and thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I'm a breast and liver cancer survivor. I did not have a mastectomy, but I did lose all my hair. The amazing thing was that I had a hairdresser who said he would not shave my hair off. And what he did to make me feel pretty is he left what hair I did have long in almost a bob. And then I wore beanies and hats that were pretty. And at the bottom, I had the hair curling out as though I had normal hair. So I never wore a wig. And I must say that I really, really appreciated from the hairdresser's point of view. The thing that I did battle with was the loss of muscle strength. I had absolutely no muscle strength. So that for me was the biggest issue regarding any kind of relationship.
Relationship to yourself, Pippa, or relationship with somebody else? Just help us understand.
Relationship to my husband.
Because
there was just no, there was physically no energy. I, could barely walk. I could barely, do anything. So that for me was the biggest issue.
So the biggest issue was that you were not in a physical state to be sexual?
Yeah.
And you're saying that was the biggest issue? I mean, this is so fascinating, Eusebius, because here, this just really makes me so cold, because here you talk about hair and we talk about loss of breasts and everything, but you're saying, just like I hear so often, Pippa, that for you, your biggest loss was your inability to have the strength to make love. So you're saying you were interested in making love and you couldn't do that at some point?
Yeah, well, going through a difficult time, you're actually wanting affection, you're wanting an intimacy, and fortunately, I hadn't had a mastectomy. Mm. I had had the hair loss, but my hairdresser had advised me against shaving off my hair, which was a fantastic idea, and I wish more women would do that. But I couldn't have any, even sort of an affectionate relationship was really difficult at times.
Physically and emotionally?
No, physically.
Just physically for you. Did any of your healthcare providers talk to you about it, or did you address this with any of them and say to them, this is where I'm really struggling, what resources do you have, how can I do this?
Well, yes, we discussed it. I had fantastic oncologists. But the point is, if you do not have muscle strength, or you do not have, if you don't have if you've got muscle fatigue and you just can hardly walk, there's not much you can do about it. So I just thought I'd mention it as being one of the issues towards feeling good about yourself, but if more people could take note of their hair and not always rush to shave it off, and rather leave some curling up from the bottom of a beanie or a hat, it does make a huge difference. Mm,
thank you, Pippa. Thank you for sharing your story. So to Rosebank. Ferial, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, Ferial. Go ahead. Share your story with us.
Thank you, Sherry. Good morning as well, Dr. Eve. I'm a breast cancer. Well, I'd like to say I try not to use survivor. I actually think fighter, because it becomes something that you do constantly. My comment is basically, when I was, the first time I knew that I was going to experience menopause was actually my first oncology appointment. And so I feel that our medical practitioners and the doctors that do this don't give you enough advice and warn you about what you're actually going to experience. And so you feel like this piece of meat on a conveyor belt going through these processes without actually fully understanding what the impacts are going to be. And I think, besides the fact that you now, you lose your breast, which is part of you, you gain weight, you go through menopause, and as a young person, you have no clue what all of this is. No one tells, they tell you about hot flashes, but they don't tell you about how you feel, your mood swings, all of those things that impact and make you feel like a different person altogether.
Yeah, I hear your surprise in your voice, Ferial, and I guess some anger that sits there. And I'm going to use your words. I've written them down, and with your permission, obviously anonymously, I'm going to put this into my presentation tomorrow just to give feedback to these wonderful, wonderful doctors who do take care of breast cancer survivors and fighters, if you want to refer yourself to that. Yeah, please get onto my blog and read it. It's really simple, but maybe it'll be of some comfort to you to know, and others who are listening, what you can expect when you do go through your breast cancer treatment.
John in Klerksdorp. Hello, John. Thanks for calling in as well.
Are you serious? I'm listening to the discussion, and I just would like to maybe add a comment from my husband's perspective.
Yes.
We have been down the road from with cancer for the last 2 years, and the first thing that happened is my wife mentioned that she was afraid of losing her identity with regards to having a mastectomy. And the other thing that I think is what we sort of relationship is that we had to push the reset button since then, because we basically were in a survival state first, and then there was a total change in our role within our relationship, how we manage the kids, how we manage the household and stuff.
Yeah.
And all of that puts pressure on who we are with ourselves and who we are together. And I think that also puts adds to the challenges with regards to intimacy as a whole. So I just wanted to add that into the discussion that we had.
John, how is it on the? I mean, it's firstly, thank you for sharing your journey with us, and I love how you've shared the fact that you had to get out of survival mode and living again. The last bit that you said. Forgive me for being nosy, and you don't have to answer it, but where are you at now in terms of how you relate to each other sexually? Has your sexual relations been restored? Because you've gone from survival to being functional. What is it? What has been the impact?
Well, if I can put it bluntly, there will never be a point as it was before. So it is, for myself, it was a challenge because I also had to change how I go about the day-to-day activities. I mean, long-term was for us a week, and short-term or medium-term was a day. So it was a total mindset change of how we go about in everyday life and everyday activity. What helped me a lot is I took the decision and said, listen, it's not my wife that has cancer, it is us that has cancer. So I tried to basically share that approach within the carrying the burden per se.
Yes.
With regards to our intimacy, it is a challenge, because it's a journey that of recovery that we have to take together, or not have, but want to take together.
Yes.
It makes it easier to actually put goals in place and to take this out of recovery. And it's not a a week journey. It's a 4, 5, 6 year life cycle journey. So it's not easy. But it's manageable, and one has to identify where you are in this road, and then basically take that road onwards.
John, you are my hero. The we language, we have cancer. It's our many life cycles. I mean, just on a parting shot for 2 seconds, are these insights and language that you developed as a couple of your own accord, or was it in a therapeutic session? Because you sound like you have really been on a beautiful journey.
I think it was. To be quite honest, the day of the diagnosis, it took us a week to talk to, to each other about it.
Sure.
Because we had to somehow pick... I had personally had to identify what do I do with myself within this.
Yes.
And then from there, we were actually basically reaching out to together again. And then from there, it was basically the journey we took together.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to do that once you decide it's not somebody else, but it's I'm part of it.
Yes, wow. I don't wish that journey on anyone, but my goodness, isn't that just what true commitment to a relationship is about, Dr. Eve?
Yeah, and considering that the divorce rate is so incredibly high.
I was about to say, yeah, that part of your blog entry also caught my attention.
And the way of finding a new partner is so difficult, and being sexual for the first time. I mean, the challenges are endless in terms of one's sexuality and body image. It goes on. So for John, fantastic that you formed a partnership with your wife, and you're acknowledging, you know, what we say, this is the new normal now. You're going to accept that it's never going to be the way it was, but you optimize in what there is, and you make use of what is available to ensure that sexuality and sexual health is something you can still enjoy together.
Absolutely. We're going to leave it there, Dr. Eve. There were so many other calls. We'll come back to this topic. It's one of those topics where I think it takes people a while to find the courage to voice what are deeply private fears and experiences. I want to thank you so much for your learnings. Maybe we'll come back to them. Yeah.
I do want to just give a shout out before, if I can, very quickly.
Of course you can.
A big event is happening in Cape Town next week on the 3rd and 4th of August, and I do want to give a shout out to any clinician or therapist who's listening. We have the Association of Black Sexologists and Clinicians coming to Cape Town for the first time. Lifeline is holding this wonderful series of lectures. If anyone is interested, please contact me, and I will give you information of how to attend this. If you're eligible to attend, come and join, come and learn. We want to be able to form an association with these black sexologists and clinicians from the States, and we need to have more dialogue in our country.
Where do they contact
Dr. Eve at dreve.co.za will be good enough.
Great stuff. Thank you, Dr. Eve.
Thanks,
thank you for your work.
Bye-bye now.